Welcome, welcome, welcome to this week's edition of The Lockdown featuring T-Cub and the Ball Hawk. All right. We know that Petty Hawk is in the building somewhere deep inside of Hawk. We're going to see if we're going to let him out at some point.
He's coming out today for this guest.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have an outstanding guest with us. We have the GOAT, Sean LaVique Moore, Martinsville's finest, a.k.a. Light Skin, a.k.a. Denty Moore. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, what we like to call him, the GOAT. What's up, family?
What's up, big dog? I mean, you know me and Cub, distant cousins somewhere. You know that, right?
Somewhere.
What was the middle name?
We distant cousins.
That's LaVique.
LaVique?
Woo-hoo! You got to be real close to me to know that.
that's a light skin middle name right there.
Yeah, that is.
Pretty boy, pretty Ricky, yeah. What they call him.
Yeah, Sean, we probably related. We've always said that what, especially because as close as our mothers were, mm-hmm. You know, growing up right in Martinsville and Axton. So, yeah. That whole Harrison clan.
You got Harrison blood. I know I do. I did the 23 and me, and I'm like Harrison everywhere.
Yeah, bro, for real. It's bananas. It is absolutely bananas. So look, let's flip it back. Let's take it back to the old school. Let's take it to Union Square. Martinsville High School. All right. You were just a legend in Martinsville. What was the determining factor and what other schools were you interested in coming out?
I'm gonna be honest with you, man. I didn't want to play football. I wanted to play basketball. That's why, Hawk talk a lot about my game, but, you know, I used to bust his ass on a regular at North Grounds.
Oh, God.
But my love was hoops.
I really wanted
to play hoops, but I just didn't have a hype, man.
Everybody that's been on the show swear they could hoop. Well, I know Sean can, though.
Sean can hoop.
I still play. I still play. Well, pre-COVID, I was playing twice a week at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah. But I remember when you lived in Virginia and when I moved up, you like, Cub, we hooping at an X time. I'm like, I went one time.
That's right.
Then the way my Achilles and all that set up, my body said, hey, fella, that ain't for you. You need to let them have that. So I had to shut that down.
Not like that AM hoops, man. But if you know Martinsville, you know that Martinsville is known for hoopers.
Yep.
I mean, when I was growing up, my hero was Tony Dallas. Tony Dallas was the man. He was the man at Virginia Union before Oakley and AJ English and those cats that came through there. Johnny Newman. Mm-hmm. Well, Tony Dallas was my hero. And so I was fortunate enough to play 1 year with Tony. But I could get on the floor, but football was my sport. Football was my ticket in terms of getting the education paid for. So, man, quite honestly, it was like Virginia Tech, Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, and Tennessee. Those are the schools I visited.
Okay.
And I, quite honestly, I had a love for Tech, man. My high school girlfriend was at Tech. I spent every weekend up there. My cousin was a defensive end there. I used to go just kick it the whole weekend in Blacksburg. And it was like home for me. Mm-hmm. So everyone knew I was going there. And it wasn't until I took my official visit to Virginia and I met the fellas, man. You know, right. Ray was on his visit. Met you. And then really Antonio Rice was the difference maker. My mom, I never forget being at the barn. My mom met Antonio. She said, my God, listen how he speaks. He's so articulate. She said, I want you to be like that boy. So it was a done deal, man. My mom was like, this is where you going.
Right.
And so I tell Antonio that still today, you know, you're the reason. My mom said, I gotta go there because I want to be just like that dude right there.
You want to be Denzel Washington.
I want to be just like him, dog. But looking back on it, I made the right decision. Mm-hmm. You know, we as you know, 86 was a rough year, boy. We thought we was going to be undefeated in the national champs after that first game.
sitting on 3-8, that all of us getting red shirts.
I ain't never playing here. They too good. John Ford, Chris Warren, Donnie Mack. I said, we ain't never seeing the field.
Right.
We lost eight straight.
Like, we were like, wait a minute, what did we do?
I know. But you know, hey, anyone from our class will tell you that those scout team practices was the best ever. Because we kicked their ass every day. And we just had fun.
Yeah. I tell people that all the time, Sean. I said, scout team defense, we would just, they would be like, Christ, stop hitting them.
Come on.
Give them a look. Give them a look.
We're not here for you.
Right. We was like, look, we're going to try to make Saturday easy because we about to give you this work Monday through Friday.
The Reds and Raiders, what was it? You know, it was like first team, second team.
Yep.
We used to kick their ass regularly. But the thing I love about it was the second year, everybody played.
Almost everybody.
Even I played. I wasn't a starter, but I played my second year.
Yeah.
My whole class was on the field second year.
Yeah, Hawk. It was just, we just came in with a different kind of swagger, fam. You know, it was not the usual UVA. Yeah, but Coach Welsh would look at us sometime like, what in the hell have I done? We just had some dogs, man. We just flat out had dogs.
If y'all was kicking their ass so much, that's why they was 3-8. Y'all should have been. Well, I ain't even gonna throw that out there. I ain't gonna do that.
We won't mention no names. We won't mention no names. You got 220 at D tackle and 210 at D end. Yeah, you gonna get your ass run through.
Yeah. Facts. Man, but it was a changing of the guard for real though. And Sean, you were the centerpiece, man. And so, you know, when we look back, 87, all right, you got a little bit of burn that year, get your feet wet a little bit. You know, a couple touchdowns here and there, a couple picks here and there. But you know, starting that 88 year, and then you were the guy, you know, you in the seat then. Led the team to a 7-4 record. Back in them days, we were pissed that we didn't get to a bowl because we just knew, you know, we were good enough. We were 7-4, and we didn't go to a bowl that year.
Now you're on New Year's Day.
Real talk. Yeah. Real talk. And you know that year was a good year for you. I mean, 2,100 yards passing, 15 touchdowns. You did have 14 damn interceptions.
Damn. Most of them came in that first game against Penn State, dog. Penn State got ass on lock that first game.
Bro, it was bad. It was real bad. It was real bad. 368 yards rushing, 10 touchdowns. Pretty good passing percentage at 121. But, you know, it was – I think that year was – a building year for us, though, you know, because it very much, as you spoke about, it was the transition of a majority of our class was now, you know, in the seat. Some of our guys, we were putting fourth and fifth year seniors on the bench. You know, we just not that those guys weren't playmakers or athletic, but they just shit. I'm gonna call it what it is. They ain't had no heart, and you know, so they we just say, look, you know what? Exit over there. Sit over there. If I need a blow, I'll call you. And that was just kind of the mentality that we had. So then as we're rolling in, Sean, after your first season as a starter in 88, what was kind of your mindset, you know, as you were rolling in to that 89 season?
88 was a tough year for me. I'm going to be honest. I never forget. It was funny. I struggled. The September, October, I remember just struggling. And I can remember Ray Roberts had just started playing. He had just moved to the offensive side of the ball. And we beat Georgia Tech that year, if I'm not mistaken, 88. And I don't know how we beat them because I probably threw three picks in the first half. And I came over to the sideline and George said something to Ray like, go talk to him. And Ray came over and asked me, get your ass out of my face. And we walked away. I was like, I'm done. And it was – we won the game, but I struggled.
Right.
But it was going into November, I remember being at Wake Forest. It was at Wake Forest because, you know, that's home for you.
Yeah.
And it was 35 minutes from me.
Right.
That was a coming out party.
Mm-hmm.
We beat the bricks off of Wake Forest. They had Mike Elkins at QB. They were a good football team. They were solid. They hadn't even allowed a touchdown in the first half, and we were up 21-0 out the gate on them.
Yeah.
So that was really after that game, I got comfortable just being in Tranquil's offense because he asked me to do a lot. You know, thinking back on it, Tranquil, we were calling plays at the line of scrimmage. We were calling automatics. We were going odd left, even right, but it was all based on fronts. we would play action pass. We were running option. We would go four wides.
Yeah.
So it was a multiple formations. So it was a lot. But by 89, I was like, okay, I'm good. Let's do this now.
Right.
So it was a tremendous amount of confidence going into 89. I was looking forward to it. But they started the season. I don't know what was up with who was scheduling them damn games. Because Notre Dame brought our ass back to reality in 89.
They was coming off that national chip. So look at here. They rolled into I always say, I'll never forget in the damn Meadowlands, I'm over on defense and I'm looking at Tony Rice looking at me. I'm looking to the left, rocket out that side. Ricky Waters in the backfield, that sweet number 12. Tony Rice looking at me and starts smiling. I get about my stance like, okay, what the hell does he know that I don't know? And why is he smiling at me? And,
right.
It was just, hey, man. Yeah.
But that was probably the best thing that ever happened to us. Think about that.
Absolutely.
Best thing that happened to us, under the limelight, playing in the national spotlight. Back then, it was only one game on TV.
Yep.
So we're the first game of the year in the Meadowlands. They beat the brakes off of us, but we came back in the second half, put a valiant effort up. Mm-hmm. But the next week, everyone in the ACC thought we would get crushed going to Happy Valley. And somehow we went in there and beat the brakes off. That's because defensively, you guys didn't give up maybe six first downs the whole day.
I mean, that game was personal to us, especially after they had ran through us previously.
Yep.
And, I mean, we knew we had a good team, though, Sean. Mm-hmm. You know, we knew we had a good team. So it was just like, look, we're not giving up any big plays. They're going to have to earn every damn thing they got. We were ready for Blair Thomas. We were ready for anything they brought. And, you know, you guys did enough on offense. And we're like, all right, hey, if we got the lead. If they don't score, they don't win. And, I mean, I think that just was a recurring theme. Because shit, you really got rolling, bro. After that, I mean, it was.
You talk about opposite ends of the spectrum, going from Notre Dame really being humbled, and then going to Happy Valley and winning. I think, you know, after we went there, I don't think anyone on that team thought we could lose again.
Yeah, yeah, and the thing is, the only one we lost was to Clemson, and you didn't play.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
You did not play that game, and so. You know, what I forget. What happened? Why did you play?
I got hurt against William and Mary the previous week.
Oh.
But you hurt.
I was running down the sideline and dude hit me. I fall out of bounds, land on my shoulder, AC sprain. Mm. So I finished the game, but couldn't pick up a ball the next week. So I missed the next week at Clemson in Death Valley.
At Clemson.
Dang.
Yeah, and so that was the only two regular season games we lost, Notre Dame and Clemson. So, yeah, it was just so, you know, hey, we went on and got a share of the ACC championship with Duke only because the ACC didn't have a tiebreaker because, we absolutely destroyed Duke. I'm talking, it was 49-28 and it wasn't that close.
Mm-hmm. Who was coaching Duke, Steve Spurrier?
Of course he was. Don't even
start it. Hey, look, man, I wanted to ask Sean, because he thought he could get away with what he did. You just told Big Ray get the hell away from you, and he really did it? Because we talking about Ray.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He was a pup then, huh?
I was Ray's big brother, though. He was a pup. He was a pup. Oh, yeah.
Okay. But what is that? Christ, Ray, go talk to him. What is he doing?
Ray was like, I'm done. Leave him alone. Leave him alone. He's in that mood.
I would have never played like this at Navy when I was a quarterback. What is it? Oh, my God.
hey, because trust me, he was a pup then because after that, rest assured, Sean would be talking trash to the defense and then run behind Ray.
Oh, yeah.
NC State, 89. Me and Marcus, we'll still talk about that today. That was the most – we talked more that game. That was probably the most vocal game I've ever been involved in my entire life because they were loaded on defense.
Yes, sir.
They were like six NFL players on defense.
Yes, sir.
But it was just back and forth all day long, yapping and yapping and yapping. And Ray and Marcus and myself, we were just fighting those dudes. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But the great thing about that, though, Cub, we used to hang with those dudes, the Jesse Campbells and Mike Jones.
Yep.
I love those cats. Ray Agnew.
Yeah, dude. You know, because Ray and Derek Denham, they from the crib. So,
right. Exactly.
You know, and then they had some dudes on offense, Naz Worthen, Danny Peoples. Bruh, you know, bruh, it was some battles back then. Okay. It was some battles. Yeah. It was some straight talent.
Dang, six NFL guys on defense, and you yapping? Yeah, oh, you better hide behind Big Ray.
Yapping.
But yeah. You know, remember what Ray talked about though, man. He was just like the dudes that was with him, Basari, Trevor Riles, Stern, all them dudes, man, that was some go-hards. They were some go-hards, and so they you know, they gave zero fucks.
Zero.
You know, they like, ah, yeah, we about to put this work in, and yeah, bruh, it was special.
Did Tranquil stay on the sideline, or was he up in the box?
He was in the box.
All right.
Yep.
How do you feel him as an OC, Sean? Do you really feel like he helped develop you as a complete quarterback?
He taught me the game. I still give him, every time I see Tranquil, I tell him, you know, he taught me everything I knew about the game. Just from an offensive mindset, you know, reading coverages, reading fronts, you know, what to do at the right time. Tranquil was my guy. And so I can attribute my entire career at Virginia. He really made me who I was. He did. He totally did. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I remember our fifth year, spring game, Tranquil and I were beefing in the meeting rooms. And I said, Coach, I said, man, just let me call. Let me call the game. And I literally went perfect in the spring game. It was like 12 for 12. Mm-hmm. And so he said, you think – I said, I'm just calling what you would have called. I said, you and I just alike, Trent. Just, you know, just roll with this.
Yeah.
And so it was at that point he realized, you know, this dude, he thinks the way I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because, Sean, let me tell you, dude, it's like, you know, people look at what you have done historically, and people outside of the game call you the GOAT. We call you the GOAT because we played with you, because there was never a time – that we felt like you weren't going to lead us to a victory. I mean, you would come over and be like, yo, fellas, just give me the rock back. We're going to get this done. And we was like, okay, bet, let's go handle this. And we had such a belief in you, dude. It was just, I mean, it's just undescribable, bro. Undescribable.
Well, you know what, Cub? Well, I think this is the last time we played Virginia Tech was 89, early in the year. Remember that?
Oh, that's right.
It was like second game of the year in Charlottesville. We had a bench clearing brawl.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah, because Maryland was the last game. Maryland was the rival back then.
Right. That was. We always played them last.
Maryland was last.
I'm trying to think of what was the left-handed quarterback they had.
Will Fear.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I remember.
I was thinking about that. You know, going into this year's game. With Virginia Tech being the first game, I was like, wow, this takes me back to 89 when we played them way in September.
Yeah.
89 game was in September. Mm. And it was a close game, but we beat them. We beat them in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played them in October in 99.
Really?
Yeah, Michael Vick's redshirt freshman year, the year they went to national championship, we played them in October.
I wonder when that game went to the last game. It had to be like probably in 2000, huh?
Well, it was the last game in 97. It was the last game in Charlottesville. We beat them. 98 was the last game down there. And then 99, we played them in October. And then 2000 went right back to the last game.
Last game. Yeah. Interesting.
Cool. So that, you know, so 10-2 regular season, Citrus Bowl berth against the Illinois, whatever the hell they were.
Alana
and Jeff George. And
Jeff George.
Yeah, bro. Hey, let's just say, Hog, it was a long day. A long day. Them little quick ass receivers. And
you got smashed by Illinois in the bowl game too?
Bro.
They were more physical.
You got smashed by them too in a bowl game.
Yeah, bro. They were way more physical than we were, bro. I mean, and you know, Jeff George was back that thing. We playing two gap trying to get a pass rush, and we trying to cover them damn receivers, all them receivers all over the little scat receivers. I think he lit us up about 321 yards or something. Hey, my boys teased me all the time. Like, damn, Cub, y'all made Jeff George leave college early.
Hey, he was taking a seven step. You remember back in the day, you take a seven step drop. You know, yeah. No one does that today because yeah. You know, the password is too good. He was taking a seven step drop, patting.
Yeah, bro, I'm talking about this Joker going through progressions. He going through progressions. Okay, one, two, three, four. Okay, let me do that over. One, two, three, four. Bro, it was rough. It was rough. I ain't gonna lie. So boom. So we shut that down as we roll it into our last year together, Sean. What was your off-season mentality? I mean, you knew after coming off a shared ACC championship, expectations were going to be high as we came into that last season in 1990. What was kind of your mindset going into that year?
I knew we were going to be really good. I just didn't know how good we were going to be. I knew because we had just won an ACC title, and I wish we could have had that game back against Illinois. You know, we really hadn't lost to anybody besides Clemson, really.
Right.
That was the only team we lost to in the conference.
Right.
But I knew we were going to be good, but I couldn't tell because I knew nothing about Kansas.
Right.
You know, everyone kept talking about Kansas. We got to go to Kansas. Got to go to Kansas. I was like, man, this is outside my way. I have no clue what we're getting ourselves involved in. But by the second quarter, we knew.
Yeah.
It was like 40 to nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be good.
Bro, and it was hot. I remember coming to the sideline and pouring water on my shoes. It was so hot out there, bro. My feet were burning.
The third quarter, I had my hat on checking out the AKAs in the section. Third quarter, I had the hat on.
It was a blowout. I mean, so you're talking about a prolific offense, Sean. That first seven games – yo, y'all on that side of the ball, bro, y'all were putting up about 48 points a game, bro. I mean, it was something special. It was something special. And, you know, that led to a number one ranking for 3 weeks in a row in both polls. It led to beating Clemson for the first time in 29 attempts. How was that for you?
You know what, man? For me, I think back about that time. All of the fifth year guys, we were in grad school. So we had a tremendously flexible schedule, right?
Yeah.
You know, with those grad school classes.
Pretty much.
So, you know, we really chilled all day, right? You know, because we had classes at night. So it was, for me, it was a lot of preparation time in terms of getting ready for games. A lot of media time. My man, Jeff Spellman, former sports information guy, Jeff was hyping me up, you know, for all the preseason accolades. So, it was just, I felt like we were on top of the world. I didn't think we could lose to anybody, even going into Clemson. Never hadn't beaten Clemson. I could tell how loose we were before that game. Like, we got this, man. Listen, we should have beat y'all last year. We should have beat y'all 88 when we had y'all here.
Yeah.
So, we knew we had Clemson. I think when we actually ran into that buzzsaw at Georgia Tech, man. That was a big downer for us.
Yeah.
Because we had been so hyped for so many weeks.
Yeah.
We got better and better and better every week.
Yeah.
But if you think about that, even though we lost the Georgia Tech game, if you remember, we came back next week and pretty much smacked Carolina.
Yeah, but it wasn't our normal. I think it was still a bit of a hangover. We got the dub. But it was still a bit of a hangover from that Georgia Tech piece. You know, and when I look back on it, man, you know, the way that you guys were performing on the offensive side of the ball and the prolific nature of which y'all were doing it, I mean, dude, you had a direct hand in about 50% of the points scored during that period of time. And so, once again, from a defensive standpoint, we like, all we have to do is get the offensive ball and they're going to generate points. We know that. And then, you know, the whole Georgia Tech thing was just really weird. If you remember, Welch jumped on me about talking trash in a paper about Ken Swilling. I didn't give a damn, you know, because Herman went out there and just fried his ass like a damn fried egg out there. He just, it was bad. It was bad, bad, and bad. You know, I never forget Herman. Herman caught a touchdown and stood between three dudes. Like, look, you need to bring your. I'm a large pizza. You need to bring your friends. More your friends to eat me. I was like, ooh. Brad.
Bro, who gave him them balls right there?
He was wearing dudes out. And so, you know, we were dominating them so much in the first half. And look, real talk, we didn't have one of Sean's main weapons in Bruce McGonagall, who was hurt, which proved down the stretch, proved to be huge. You know, first half, hey, it was cool. We Georgia Tech, we blitzing, we doing everything. We came out after halftime hella conservative. Hella conservative. And it was a play that Sean hit Nicky Fish out in the flat, hit him right in the face mask. It bounces up in the air. Calvin Tiggle intercepts it. They started getting momentum. Yeah. And when we went conservative, they got a little bit of life. They got momentum. It was almost like, all right, now let's try to turn the switch back on. And that game was way closer than it had to be. You know, even to the point where we came down to the touchdown that got called back because we didn't have enough men on the line of scrimmage.
You know, that's not even a penalty in this day and age.
Yeah, bro. It was an old whack ass. We were like, wait a minute, what?
Bro. It felt like Halloween, man. The start of the second half, we were riding high. I don't know if you remember this. I remember this. I remember every play in that game. But the start of the second half, I'm coming down the line, running the option, and I'm holding the ball right here. And if you watch the video, Paul Collins is hitting the ground, and his foot kicks the ball out of my hand. Mm-hmm. That was the first turnover to start the second half. Mm-hmm. And George looking at me like, what happened? I said, I don't know. I have no clue. Like, I didn't drop the ball. Literally, Paul's foot knocked the ball out of my hand. It flew out of my hand. That was turnover one. Then Nicky Fisher, ball hit him in the face mask, went straight up in the air. I had to chase Calvin Ticker down.
Yep.
So the momentum was changing like that. It was unbelievable. It was like Halloween.
Yeah, it was the craziest thing, man. Yep. And, you know, and so we lose that game on a last second field goal, and I still to this day will say that field goal was not good. It just didn't look good. You know, so I mean, a huge downer for us. But you know, like Sean said, we go into the next week at Carolina, we get the dub. It wasn't pretty, but we got it. You know, we play in Maryland at home, and we're thrashing them in the first half.
Thrashing,
you know, and then Sean gets hurt on it was crazy, some crazy stuff. I think that dude stepped on your hand intentionally, Sean. Let's just call it what it is. Call it what it is, you know. And then, bruh, it was almost an exact replica of the second half of Georgia Tech. We went conservative on O. You know, Blunden came in, went conservative. Then we went conservative on defense. We stopped doing what was working for us, and then we end up losing the game. And then we go to Tech that last week, man, look. I was like, well, y'all please quit kicking our ass out here because it was bad.
You know, we had already accepted the Sugar Bowl too,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
We had accepted the Sugar Bowl before the Virginia Tech game. So they were mad. They were like,
oh, they mad. They big mad.
The Sugar Bowl, and they ain't played the game yet.
Yeah, bro. They were big mad, Hulk.
I bet they was, man. Hey, so both of y'all, how was it, man, on campus being the number one ranked team in the country? Not with George in practice. I'm talking about on campus, like walking around. Did y'all feel like you were like Bobby Brown from New Edition and Ralph Tread? Like, how was the treatment, man?
Back then, Cool Moe D was my man. That's what I felt like. Yeah. Cool Moe D.
You had the shades too?
And I had the hat, you know, the little bean. Me and D Boyd had the hat.
Yes, the bean sir.
Cool Moe like D. A painter?
Out of control, man.
Yeah. Because you had classes at night, Sean. You done told yourself, so.
I did. I had all my classes were at night. I took grad school classes.
Oh, yeah. I know you had classes at night.
It was a fun time to be in Charlotte.
I was at the BBS during the day.
Say that again, Sean. What'd you say?
I was at the BBS during the day.
Oh, yeah. The BBS.
Yeah. It was a fun time to be in Charlottesville at number one in the country, bruh.
I know. I don't have to be awesome, man. Like, the parties and. Everything. See, that's the access I'm trying to get out of y'all, like the parties, that type of information. Like, that's the part that we need to talk about. Like, Sean, you a Heisman hopeful. What's the interview request?
There was a party at my house almost every weekend because I had a house off campus on Old Lynchburg Road. Every weekend. Every weekend.
Yeah.
Every weekend.
Every weekend.
Weekend or day?
Rugby Roll Thursday night.
At least Thursday night. Hey, man, such a limitation, though, but at least Thursday night.
Look, I put it to you this way.
Okay, there we go.
We lost the Georgia Tech game because I lived off grounds, too. Me and a couple, few fellas, we lived in a duplex.
Yeah.
So we lost the Georgia Tech game. I go to the post-game show interview, and they're like, Tony, you had a lot to say this at, during the week. What happened?
Oh, they coming at you.
I said, well, the best team didn't win today.
Ooh.
And I said, and when Tony Covington said somebody's overrated, he means it. And I got up and dipped.
You LeBron James?
I walked out of that joint. Bro, I had a toga party to get to at that point, bro. I had a toga party. We was having a toga party at the crib. So, you know, I mean, because we was like, we fully anticipated that we was going to win.
Yeah.
You know? The show, hey, the party was going to go on. I was going to go drown my sorrow. Facts.
What type of beer y'all drink back then? Bud Light, Budweiser? What was the beer choice?
We had a keg or something. I don't even remember.
Mickey's Big Mouth.
Huh?
Mickey's Big Mouth? Malt liquor.
Oh, like Slits. Okay.
Yeah, we were some malt liquor heads back then, though. Yeah,
y'all thought y'all was Billy D back then. Well, let me find out.
That was affordable. That was affordable. That was affordable. Colt 45 like, was my quart of choice. At 89 cents a quart.
God damn. What was gas like? 53 cents?
That's when you really did ask for $2. Give me $2 on that.
Bro, that's about a half a tank of gas right there, bro. Back then. Real rap.
So when y'all was number one, did Coach Walsh ever address the team saying you're not that good?
All the time. I think so. Cub, my funny story is when Cub said we were on the bus. was it the bus? We were somewhere. No, we were in the locker room. And Coach said something about all week long, you know, we should have been quiet and, you know, we were reading our press clippings. And Cub was like, you know, I don't think that really hurt. And George was like, no, it hurt. It hurt. George's like, no, it hurt, Tony. It hurt.
Oh, he called you Tony. Oh, he looked right at you, Tony.
Oh, he was big mad, bro. Because, hey, I was a man when talking that trash. So, hey. That's just what I did.
Get ready, sir. You some shut the hell up, Jesus. That's what Coach. Yeah, God damn it, Tony. I guess you want to talk this week, huh?
So then, Sean, we stumble. Really, we stumbling into the Sugar Bowl at this point. But we have a chip on our shoulder because we knew the type of team we had. We had just the last three games, we had just not put it forth. And you know, so we roll in. Tennessee is number 10 in the country, and they are absolutely loaded on both sides of the ball. A ton of NFL guys on the field. Both of their tackles, first round picks. Dale Carter, Chuck Smith. I mean, Alvin Harper, Carl Pickens. So, bro, they were absolutely loaded. And
Chris
Mims.
You remember Chris Mims who passed away, defensive line? Yeah. Oh, they were loaded. Chuck Smith, dude.
And so they didn't give us a chance in hell to win the game. And, you know, but we were like, all right, look. We
would have won the game if I hadn't played. I shouldn't have played that game. I hate when they show that game on Classic Sports.
Yeah.
I didn't even complete one pass during practice during the week. There's no way I should have played that game.
Right. But the threat of you was the thing. You know what I'm saying? I think that was – because honestly, Sean, look, you missed a couple of passes with Herman downfield, but he wouldn't have been open if you wouldn't have faked that ride in, you know, past 30 gap, you running in that joint like you giving it to Kirby and then drop back because they worried about that run game. So they secondary flying up, Herman running past them. So, I mean, bro, if you could have pleaded one or two of those, bro, we'd have been up at halftime 30 to nothing.
Yeah, that was a tough one. That was a tough outing, though. I look back on it. That's the game that probably hurt me in terms of the combine, because I couldn't work out at the combine either.
What was the diagnosis of your injury again, Sean?
Because I broke my thumb. I had a Bennett's fracture. So You still see it. But Cove and I went to Japan together. Remember, Cove, I didn't even play in Japan.
Nope.
I went and hung out the whole week.
Yep.
Japan. Yeah, Cove and I went to Japan. But it was a senior game.
Senior game. Really? Senior game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, they had senior games in Japan. That wasn't around the time when Mike Tyson fought Buster Douglas, was it?
It was. Actually, it was. That was one of the best trips I've ever been on in my life.
Man, it was a blast.
Oh, God.
It was an absolute blast. I hung out with Michael Stonebreaker a ton while I was out there. That's a wild boy.
I love that trip. It's the only time I've ever been on a plane where they had both teams. Both teams on the same flight. They said, we got to save this money, man.
Yeah, but it was a good time. And it helped me, honestly, because I played well. So it really, really helped me.
Yeah.
For sure. So look, you that year you finished leading the nation in passing efficiency and you finished fourth in the Heisman voting. I know you couldn't perform at the combine, but you know, my thing is your body of work that you had put together. I mean, finishing your senior year with over 2,200 yards, 21 touchdowns, 306 rushing yards, 8 more touchdowns on the ground. You had put in the necessary work, in my opinion, dude, to go higher than you got drafted. And so, I mean, what was your feeling as the draft was approaching, you know, and then draft day going into it?
Mentally, I thought, you know, when you having played 3 years and been a 2-year co-captain and been a leader, you know, I would have thought from the leadership perspective and just the body of work on the field. Mm-hmm. I thought I would get drafted no later than the fourth round.
Right.
And then when I saw 11 quarterbacks go in the draft ahead of me, then it was just for me, I was like, I don't really care anymore. Like that's probably the worst period of my life. Just watching 11 guys go ahead of me and 2 were backups. Pat O'Hara played behind Todd Marinovich.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
He was drafted ahead of me. So I'm thinking to myself, well damn.
Whoa. And Pat was trash.
Like, really? So hey, it was, yeah, that was a tough period for me, man. That's why, you know, it's funny. Like, every time the draft comes on now, I can watch about the first 30 minutes and then I can't watch it.
Yeah.
Was it like any, like, diagnosis that you wouldn't be able to throw like you could with that injury that nobody told you? Or
Warren Moon had that same injury. There wasn't that many brothers playing quarterback, but Warren had the same injury. And came back to the playoffs and played. So for me, I shouldn't have played in the bowl game because I literally was coming off for 4 weeks of surgery and tried to throw the football, which was difficult to do. But I didn't work out the combine because the combine was a month after our bowl game. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until the spring that I actually worked out for a couple of teams. The only team I actually worked out for was the Cincinnati Bengals. Remember Sam Weiss?
Yeah.
Sam Weiss was the head coach, came to Charlottesville and worked out. So I was like, wow, at least somebody's working me out. That was the only team I worked out for.
Wow.
Yep.
How you go from a Heisman hopeful?
Finishing fourth
and nobody even worked you out.
No one worked me out. Yeah,
that's crazy.
So look, I'm gonna go ahead and just be controversial with that shit, cause that's what I do. you know, let's just talk about it. It wasn't a bevy of black quarterbacks getting the opportunity back then. Let's keep it 8 past 92. Seriously.
Yep.
Yeah, Andre Ware won the Heisman in 89 and was taken. He was a 10th pick by Detroit. And that was probably the highest since Doug that brother had been drafted at that position. Doug was the first round, but the Tampa Bay traded back to get him because they didn't want to take him with the first overall pick. They traded to get him. They didn't want to make him the number one overall pick. And with Andre, he won the Heisman. You know, he set every record in college football in 89. Yeah. So I got a chance to meet him. And so, you know, and so in 90, I figured, okay, well, Dre went the first round. Right? I did my thing, played for 3 years.
Right.
So I figured fourth round, I'd be content. I figured I was up in Atlanta. And it just went on and on and on. 11th round, Dan Reeves called me, and I was pretty much checked out. He called and said, look, man, we were going to draft Herman, and we kept watching your tape. So we're going to take you with the 11th round selection. So I literally went out there the next week, and I saw that they only had 2 quarterbacks on the roster. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to make this team. They're keeping 3. They already told me they're keeping 3, and there's only 3 of us on the team. So, you know, I knew I was set. And then they gave me like seventh round money. So I was, you know, felt a little bit.
Yeah.
How was that being, kind of being an understudy to Elway?
It was good. You know, we immediately developed a relationship. Mike Shanahan was our quarterback coach. So between the meeting room, you got Elway, Gary Kubiak, who's now offensive coordinator, Mike Shanahan, who was our offensive coordinator, and me. So that was our meeting room every day. So, I mean, you're talking about learning from, you know, learning from the best, Shanahan, Kubiak, and Elway.
Right.
So it was a good experience for me.
How was Elway's preparation?
You know, the 4 years that I was there with him, I didn't think it was, you know, we went to the playoffs 3 of those 4 years, and we went to the AFC Championship my first year. We lost to Buffalo. But I didn't think John prepared as well until Mike came back. That we fired. Shanahan got fired after 12-4. We went 12-4 and got a first round bye. And Dan Reeves and Shanahan didn't like each other.
Okay.
So he fired Mike Shanahan after we went 12-4.
Wow.
So it wasn't until Mike came back as a head coach in 95 or 96 that Elway played his best football.
Okay.
I think he had a chip on his shoulder the entire time that I was there and Dan was still the head coach. Even when people don't remember this, but Wade Phillips was the head coach for 2 years.
Right.
Dan was fired after 92 and Wade was the coach in 93 and 94.
Okay.
And then Mike Shanahan came in after 2 years of Wade.
Okay.
So, it was then when John played his best football and they won a Super Bowl.
And Tommy Maddox, he got drafted when?
My second year, 92. So it was my second year that I went into it. So after the first year of being one of three and being on the roster, the second year they bought in, what's the guy's name? Steve Pelor. Remember him played at with the Cowboys?
Yeah.
They signed Steve Pelor to a multi-million-dollar contract, and they drafted Tommy, and Gary Kubiak retired. So here I am, Elway 1, Pelor 2, Tommy 3, me 4, going into training camp.
Dang.
That was the scenario going into my second year. But because I had knew the offense, those other two guys didn't know the offense. And Dan had a very complicated offense.
Mm-hmm.
It was old school Tom Landry, odd is right, even is left. Think about that.
Right.
Looking at it from a defensive perspective. Odd was right, even was left. So I knew the offense. And so John was hurt in preseason. So guess who got all the reps?
Yep.
Me. So when we had preseason games, I'll never forget Cove. It was actually you. You remember this? You came to Denver. Tampa came to Denver. Yep. Second preseason game.
Yep.
I started the game and had like 3 touchdowns in the first half. And I was like, well, shit, that's it. I'm good now. I don't want to go for it. They cut Pelor the next day.
Dang.
They cut Pelor the next day and promoted me to number 2. Mm-hmm. So it was, man, that was crazy.
And then Elway got hurt late in that year. He missed the last six games.
And I wasn't getting any reps because Elway was playing every game. But like week 10, Elway goes down against the Giants. Lawrence Taylor knocked him out of the game. And Tommy was actually holding for extra points. And I was, I was a number 2, clearly number 2. But Tommy had to finish the game because there was a rule back then, the third quarterback couldn't go in the game unless the 1 and 2 both got hurt.
What?
Because it was a rule. That was a rule. The third quarterback was the emergency guy. So technically I was number 3 on the roster because Tommy was holding for extra points. So he finished the game and had a touchdown pass. And Dan was like, well, guess what, Sean? Tommy's gonna start next week. We went to Seattle on Monday night. It was the worst NFL game. If you look it up, it was the worst NFL game on Monday. The final score was 9-6 in overtime.
Ooh.
Yikes.
Ray was a rookie. I never forget that because Simon Fletcher was cooking Ray's ass. Ray was a rookie left tackle. And it was just a defensive battle. But Tommy started that game. And then the next week, we lost that game. We went to the Coliseum to play the Raiders. We lost that game. We didn't even – I think we had 10 first downs. And then it was the following week where Shannon just talked about this on his show, Shannon and – what's the guy's name? He's on there. Shannon and Skip. Skip Bayless and Shannon. They talked about this about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
The game that I played, my first NFL game, was against the Dallas Cowboys, who won the Super Bowl in 92. They put me in the game, but they alternated me and Tommy.
Oh, I remember that.
It was a debacle. They didn't want to kill his confidence. And, you know, so I alternated literally every snap. Every snap.
What?
Every
snap. Pop Warner?
Bruh, that's Virginia Tech, four years ago.
Yeah.
That went on for 2 weeks. We lost to Dallas 35-31 at home. And then we went to Buffalo the next week and we lost to them. And we alternated every other play.
Every other play. So y'all were bringing the plays in.
Yeah.
In a professional football game.
The head coach and offensive coordinator. So we just went in back and forth.
Man, it was crazy. These are paid professionals making that decision.
But Dan got fired after that too.
Yeah, I bet.
He should have.
I bet.
Dan got fired after that year, and Wade Phillips was named head coach, and Jim Fossil came in as offensive coordinator.
Jim Fossil.
Remember him? He was the head coach of the Giants.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I immediately
Wade seemed like he always get his job right after somebody else get fired. Like that's like Wade.
I don't know if Wade ever played football, but he keeps a job, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yes, he do. He go right back to defensive coordinator, this, and his head coach get fired, he get promoted, then he go right back to defensive coordinator.
Every time. Every time.
Wow. How did you and Fossil get along?
We did not get along.
Okay.
Fossil came from the college ranks, and he and John, he coached John at Stanford.
Oh.
They had a relationship, a previous relationship. So they got along great. But he and I just never saw eye to eye. Mm. Never saw eye to eye. And the only time I really played was preseason.
Right.
So my third and fourth year, I never saw the field.
Wow. And then in between seasons, you were playing for Birmingham Fire in the World League, right?
I played 1 year. I did that for 1 year. Okay. I hated it. I put on 30 pounds doing that.
Wow.
I was in Birmingham eating all that Southern food, drinking all them Long Island iced teas.
And that gumbo and oxtail and stuff.
Them Long Island iced teas that come in mayonnaise jars, man. I was taking two of them to the head. Man, I was done. I came back. I was 235 going into training.
They looking at you like, did you go eat Sean Moore? What the hell?
Failed all the running tests, failed the physical, blood pressure was high. Man, it was a debacle.
That's just terrible. So
blood pressure high.
So after 4 years, did you decide to go into the Arizona free agency or were you released by Denver?
No, I had a – I'll never forget this. Adam Schefter was writing for the Rocky Mountain News, did an article on just talking about, you know, my success, having been 11th round draft pick and been, you know, been on the team going into my fourth year. And I said, yeah, man, it's really frustrating because, you know, I know the offense and, you know, I felt like I just want to compete for a backup position. And Fossil called me in and was like, hey, man, you don't be saying things like that. And literally – that afternoon, they released me.
Damn.
And so within 2 days, the Cardinals picked me up. Buddy Ryan was the head coach of the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. They were horrible. But they had Steve Berline and Jim McMahon as their quarterbacks. Oof. So literally, I go there, and I'm there for a couple of weeks, and it's like rotating quarterbacks. Jay Schrader was there. Who else did there was about four other quarterbacks that were on that roster. And it was at that point I said, you know what, maybe I should go up to Canada and play. So my agent negotiated a contract for me to go up to Canada in 95, which would have been my fifth year. And I was on three teams in one season. I went Ottawa, Winnipeg, Calgary in one season.
Dang.
Wow.
But I went from Ottawa, we were really bad. I was on the same team with Danny Barrett, who's a great offensive coordinator in the league now. Andre Ware was on the team. I got traded to Winnipeg. It was me, Reggie Slack, Terry Dean, Kevin McDougal. It was a ton of us on that team. Mm-hmm. And every week, one of us would start, and then the next one would, you know, it was like rotating quarterbacks. And then it wasn't until – this is the funny stories. Spaz. Remember Spaz?
Yeah.
Spaz was a D coordinator when we were at Virginia the whole time.
Yeah, that's my position.
When we left to go to the pros, Spaz went to the pros. He went to Calgary. And I'll never forget, I'm playing, here I am on the bench at Winnipeg, and Calgary had put up 60 on us. And I'm walking off the field, and I'm like, I don't know anybody out here. I'm just going to walk to the locker room. And Spaz called my name. And I'm like, well, what the hell? And so Spaz says to me, hey, man, it's good seeing you. He said, why aren't you playing? Yeah. I said, man, I wish I was. He said, man, I'm going to call you on Monday. And I'm like, Spaz always just talked a lot. I said, man, the hell with Spaz. I ain't listening to Spaz. True enough, Monday morning, though, they called me in and said the Calgary had made a trade for me. Flutie was hurt. Doug Flutie was their franchise quarterback. But, Jeff Garcia was the backup, and Garcia was hurt. So I'm starting for Calgary the next week against my old team.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Did you win?
Won the game, played well. John Huffnagel, who's a great general manager up there now, still there, was the head coach and offensive coordinator. But we only had two games remaining in the season. So when the season ended, we got a first-round bye, and Flutie and Garcia both came back. So Flutie was the franchise quarterback. We ended up going to the Grey Cup that year. We lost the Grey Cup, and Garcia and I just hung out in the casinos the whole time while Flutie was taking that beating during the Grey Cup. So that was it, man. And after that, I just said, I got to call this quits. It's just too much.
Right. So was it 4 years or 5 years in the NFL?
4 years in the NFL, one in the CFL.
In the CFL. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Wow. I never heard of a quarterback rotate everywhere he go, Sean.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. How do you do that, man? Rotating every other play, then rotating every other game. It's like, damn.
Yeah, no, it was a crazy career.
But I wonder, Sean, the way that the NFL game has changed now. Mm-hmm. Whether do you feel like if you were in this NFL with your skill set and ability to understand an offense, understand a defense, be flexible, being able to run the ball and throw the ball at a very efficient clip, do you think you would have some serious success in this times?
Let me just say this. I'm gonna paint a picture for you. Do you realize at Virginia, I never took a snap. I never took a shotgun snap.
Never.
I've never. I didn't even know what shotgun was until I got to Denver, and I was like, "What the hell is this? what are we doing?" I never took a shotgun snap.
Yeah.
The game is. I mean, it's changed so much now. Like with the zone read and you know, quarterbacks out. It's totally different, but it's conducive for the way I played the game for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I wasn't necessarily fast, but I was, you know, I look back at some of the games. I used to love to run when the opportunity presented itself. Yeah. Remember the Louisville game at Charlottesville? After they beat us in 88, 89, they came to us.
Yep.
Browning Nagel was the quarterback, second-round pick.
Yep.
Louisville was leading with, like, a minute to go in the game, and we went literally right down the field. And basically, we ran three quarterback draws, and they went for, like, 60 yards. And we kicked the field goal and won a game.
Dang.
Yeah. And I also think that black quarterbacks are getting an opportunity now, though, to shine. Sure. You know, whereas you didn't, you know, to me, you didn't get a fair shot, to be quite honest. I think you were in a situation where you were behind a Hall of Fame quarterback. So, if anything, you were going to learn, and then perhaps you were going to get an opportunity elsewhere. You know, and it just you just the way that I chalk it up is that you never got the opportunity to really showcase what you could do. I don't think it had anything to do with your skill. I honestly think situation and, you know, unfortunately, the color of your skin, bro, you know, and that, to me, that's a goddamn Greek tragedy right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, you know, I hate to say this, like, I enjoy football, but I don't necessarily love the game. I love the fact that my son is still playing. He's made a career of it.
In Canada.
Yeah, and loving life and, you know, able to, his family can survive and have a good life up there. He's good at work.
You a two-time granddaddy.
I saw he was up for like one of the top defensive players this past decade. They were trying to work for players of the decade, and he was on the list.
Yeah. So he was an all-star last. He was all CFL. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, 10 sacks at D tackle.
Yeah. Wow.
Which is, you know, hard to do up there because you got a yard off the ball.
Right.
1 yard off the ball.
The ball.
And you remember what Dean told us about that position, about playing D line, Cove, how that's where the least imports are at.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So for him, the floor is at defensive line at D tackle.
Yeah.
That's a lot right there.
Yeah.
So, you know, post NFL. Worked with the NCAA a little bit, XFL scout for a little bit, worked with USA football, coached it, got the coaching bug at St. Albans. How was that experience coaching at St. Albans?
I loved St. Albans, man. That was probably the best experience I've had in the 20 plus years. I said something recently, somebody. That was the best experience I've ever had. I didn't know what I was getting into. I was hoping my son would go to school there at that $40,000 tuition. And his ass chose to go to DeMatha, so I still had to come out of pocket. But I was hoping, you know, Mike wasn't built for those academics, though, because St. Albans is like the Harvard of high schools.
Right.
He wasn't. Mike was like, nah, man, I need some football. I need some basketball. I can't go up here with these nerds. But it was a good experience for me, man. The network that I met, you know, I was fortunate enough to work with the late Malcolm Pittman. I got to work with him.
Yeah, for sure. There,
I enjoyed it there, man. Met a lot of great kids, a lot of great kids that are working on Wall Street now, killing it. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate to work with Senator Evan Bott. His boys were part of my advisory group. So I met a lot of great kids there. You know, Jeffrey Wright went there too.
Oh, okay. The actor.
So spent some time with him. And then we had a number, you know, between Yusef Jackson and Billy Keys and Brad Collins. We had a lot of guys to come through there, Larry Holmes. All those cats had ties to St. Albans. So
It
was easy for me to step in there because UVA and St. Albans, there was an instant connection there.
Yeah. And then you rolled out of there and you came on home. Coach London.
Oh,
Coach London rang your phone.
Yeah, now we're gonna have some fun.
Uh-oh. Yeah. 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 So there you now you are an assistant coach for the University of Virginia Cavaliers. Your alma mater. Yeah,
the GOAT is back.
Yeah, yeah. So the GOAT is on the yard. The GOAT is on the yard. So
who next to the GOAT, man? Y'all giving me too much love.
Nah, bro. We call it like you see it. You know, come on. Come on. So then you come back and what made you want to come back and coach at Virginia?
So honestly, Mike really convinced me. Mike London, you know, we had developed a little bit of rapport when he was at Richmond. And, you know, he recruited the D.C. Mike consistently recruited the D.C. area. So we had been in touch. But I really had no ambition to coach at the collegiate level.
Right.
But when he brought it to my attention, I thought, wow, you know, here I am. I'm coaching at St. Albans. I'm also teaching there. But I had a quarterback business where I was training quarterbacks. Dwayne Haskins was one of the quarterbacks I was training.
Wow.
I trained a lot of quarterbacks in the D.C. area. So I had about 10 guys that I was training consistently. And so it was a lucrative business, and it kept me busy between, you know, teaching there and coaching and the instruction. So when I saw the opportunity and I thought about it, I was like, well, this is going to do away with all my little side hustles because I got to be all in when I'm here.
Right.
And, you know, coming back home, man, I lived in Charlottesville. That was my third time back there because I lived, you know, having gone to school there. When my career was over, I moved back to Charlottesville, 1995, 96. I moved back to Charlottesville kind of in a transition. Mm-hmm. So it was my third time back, man. So I was like, third time's a charm, you know. I'm gonna buy my house and live happily ever after here. Right. And I love recruiting and working with that staff. I still talk to Jim Reed and I still talk to Poindexter Weekly. Those are some of the best dudes I ever met, man. I love those cats.
And last time you talked
to Chip. I got no heart.
Yeah. Let me talk to Chip.
I talked to Chip about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So still talk to Vince Brown. And, you know, Vince Brown and Mike are literally 45 minutes away.
Oh,
so anytime I shoot down to the outlets, do a little shopping, I always stop through there and see them at the facility, athletic facility.
Because Sean, you talk about the staff, man, and we know about, you know, the wins and losses and all the hearsay about everything, all the politics surrounding football. But how was it like just
preparing with that staff and going into games and, you know, just the X's and O's? Because you talk about yourself, you got
that. Talking about a very diverse staff, too, now.
Yeah, you got Jim Reed, who I talked to several guys who played for him that rave about him.
Yeah, but not only that, the one thing I love that Mike did was he had a very diverse staff, man. We talk about, you know, brothers coaching and having opportunities coaching. I never coached at the collegiate level. Poindexter had been there for a number of years. Chip had done an extremely good job of recruiting. Vince Brown was up and coming coach. So you're talking about four African American brothers on the staff, and then you throw in Jim Reed, a former head coach.
Yeah.
So I love the camaraderie that we had there. I loved it. It was nothing like going in every day. I loved it. I do think there was some conflict in terms of the philosophies, both offensively and defensively. You know, I'd never forget this. When Mike was, I wasn't the last coach hired. Laser was the last coach hired. And Mike was interviewing offensive coordinators. And I'll never forget this because I think about it every time I see him. Pep Hamilton was out of work.
Oh.
Pep Hamilton was out of work. And Pep and I had a relationship because I worked at Howard. Pep called me and said, "Hey man, Sean, you think you can get me in with Mike?" And I said, "Man, let me see." And Laser was already on the flight to And there was another guy from Syracuse who was coming in the same day. It was two guys in that day. And I said, "Coach, man, if you could just, you know, give Pep a shot." And, you know, think about it. Pep Hamilton now. Pep is killing the Chargers now.
Now with the Chargers, yeah.
But he's been a head coach. He was, you know, Harbaugh guy at Michigan. He was at Stanford. So we had a chance, man, to add another brother to the mix, another great offensive mind. Mike, Bill came highly recommended, and no offense to Bill, I think we had a good system in place, but I don't think everyone was on the same page.
Right. Sorry. Damn. Bro, Pep. Yeah, I think that changes the dynamic. If you got Pep Hamilton instead of Bill Laser.
Did they feel like it would be a conflict of interest if you was a coach? You didn't coach the quarterbacks, right?
No, I didn't. And everyone asked me that. Because I had been coaching quarterbacks the whole time. It doesn't matter the level, but I'm coaching quarterbacks from third grade to high school and getting them to college. But no, so I came in. It was a transition for me to coach receivers. I coached receivers my first 2 years.
Yeah. Just like Dex didn't coach safeties, he was coaching running backs
when he first came on. I think at the collegiate level, you gotta make adjustments until the right opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, because majority of the time you don't see somebody outside the offensive coordinator really coach the quarterbacks, right? That's rare, right?
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
Well, like when Obi was the OC at Virginia. Obi had been known for coaching offensive linemen. Obi didn't know that about coaching QBs. But, you know, in terms of the mechanics of being a quarterback, Obi couldn't do that, but the philosophy didn't change. Like, the offense stayed the same. So when Tranquil left, O'Brien became the offensive coordinator. He started working with the quarterbacks then.
Okay.
Wow. And so – That ended rather unceremoniously, and I know it left a bitter taste in your mouth. It left a bitter taste with a lot of us. We just didn't like how it had happened.
Yeah.
So how I go down? No, I'm just playing.
the legit question for how did it go down?
I don't know. We can talk about that publicly. But let me just say this.
You got an NDA or something? We got an NDA? I don't want to mess nothing up.
Let me just say this. For me, it's taken a lot for me because I blame, for a long time, I placed a lot of blame on the entire university, the program. I wanted to wipe my hands. Like, I never wanted to return.
Right.
It was so bad. It had gotten so bad. Like, even when my son finished, he didn't want to go back. He didn't want anything to do with the Hoos. Anyone have anything to do with the Hoos? Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Mike, you can't." I said, "Man, this network is going to be way good to you when you finish playing ball." I said, "You gotta stay in touch with these people." For me, it was just a matter of, okay, Sean, you gotta get over some of the pain that they that they put you through, and just, you know, this is home to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a lot. It took a lot from me. But for me, I was almost embarrassed because there was never really any explanation given. It was like, hey, we need your laptop, we need your cell phone and your car keys, need you out of the building at 5 o'clock. And I'm like, wait a minute, shit. I helped build a building. What are you talking about? Like, right. And then you don't tell me why. So that was the hard part for me. There was no explanation. It was like, we're making some changes.
Like an episode of Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro. I mean, we all kind of got wind and it kind of went down, something like that. And so I remember having a lot of conversations with you afterwards, Sean, trying to get you to come back, telling you, hey,
oh, yeah, dude,
sure, you got to let that shit go, man. Because, you know, really, it's really one individual was really responsible, you know, and we fuck it, John Oliver, you know, let's call it whatever. I was like, wait a minute, was I almost not about to be 100?
Yeah, but my thing is, who fires a position coach as, like, we're going to fire the position coach. That's what we got to make a change. That position right there, we're going to be like, God dang, bro.
Right, right.
Well, here's the thing, though, man. I look at college coaching, and I think about the recruiting aspect. Like some guys are evaluated on their ability to recruit, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
When I took the job there, I was all in from a recruiting perspective, as well as X and O's, the whole shebang, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm an asset in the recruiting part. Like,
that's a fact.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, Dex and I would go to DC and we'd go into Darius Jennings' home.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was like, oh, this is a no-brainer. Dude, this is where he's going, you know, 4-star kid. Boom, we got it.
Yeah.
You know, we would go, and we could go into any house together because here we are, we're both a product of the place. And we're the place that we went to.
Yes. Yeah.
He was a no-brainer, man.
The best quarterback ever and the best safety.
The best, yo, I mean, that's come ridiculous.
On. Come on.
That's ridiculous. The parents just, like you just said, Sean, the parents resonate with y'all to where – It trickles down to the kid. Like, do absolutely y'all know who they are? Like, go with them. When you go visit, you're going to see their face everywhere.
Yep.
All Americans right there. Yep. Tied jerseys right there.
But then y'all just real dudes too, though, man. It's like, you know, it's like.
For real with the parents.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, I love that dude to this day, man, because we had such a great time together. And we were we were good together, in particularly when it came to recruiting, man. We could get everything we wanted.
It showed.
Yeah.
It showed.
Yeah.
Damn.
So that part I never quite got, you know. Because, you know, I mean, the backbone of the football program is recruiting, man.
Yeah. That's no question.
It is.
There's no question. I mean, you know, Chip has done yeoman's work. Chip is a recruit lights out.
No doubt. Yeah, buddy.
So, yeah, that is – what are you doing these days then, fam?
Man, I've been, I got back into education in 16 after finally coaching and doing some stuff with the college football playoff. And I was doing some diversity work. And then when Mike started playing professionally, man, I wanted to have some flexibility to see him play. So I was getting up there at least like once a month. So in 2018, I moved out west. I was out in Arizona working for a startup company. Mm-hmm. And since this whole pandemic thing, I'm still working, but I'm based out of here. I'm back in Virginia. So I'm in Richmond.
Okay.
But I'm looking at opportunities, man. I'm trying to finish my career, either doing some diversity work or back in athletics. Just kind of going through a bunch of interviews now and seeing what happens here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. You know, you being in a diversity space, you know, if you're able to tie that into athletics, man, I think that's a sweet spot for you.
Oh, big time.
Especially, you know, with what's going on now with the racial and social injustices that are, you know, they killing our black brothers and sisters every day, it seems like, and there's no accountability. And so I think you, someone like yourself, who has really built himself from, you know, Martinsville's finest to the GOAT you know, in athletics and just what you've done, been able to do in mass, you know, and working with kids, coaching kids, you know, working with youth. And, you know, I think it's a natural thing, man, because you have the credibility, you have the voice, the platform that kids respect. And so they need it, Sean. They needed it. And I think the onus is on all of us as Black men on this podcast to figure a way that we are getting information out to these young Black and brown brothers and sisters to help them understand that, listen, you have a voice. And here, if you want to affect change, then you got to be that change. And I think someone like yourself has the credibility, just like Hawk, myself, to be able to come together, man. And Ray was talking something similarly about this on the podcast last week, that we need to figure out a way that we can get to the masses, man, and affect this kind of change. Because if not us, then who?
Right. That's an excellent point, Cub. I've been reaching out to some of these cats that have that I actually coached at Virginia, the Cain and Severins of the world, trying to guide them. They're going to be the next great leaders.
Right.
I love that brother Kanan, and I love, you know, there are a lot of kids that were hit. Kanan and Mike were the same year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I keep trying to get Mike prepared to life after football because, you know, he's been doing it for 5 years now. He's been fortunate because, you know, he's gone way past the average.
Right.
Yep.
Got to get him ready, man, for that transition. Because I tell him all the time, football is an experience. It's not a career. It's just an experience in your life.
There you go. Yep. Does he reside in Canada?
Yeah, he's there year round. And it's quite honestly, it's safer there right now.
Yeah. And he don't get double taxed either.
Right.
So, yeah, that's great. So how's it feel to be a grandpappy twice, bro?
Man, I love it, man. I love it.
Old ass. Your old ass.
They start acting a fool. I just give them to their mama. Hey, man.
That's right. That's what you do. How old are they now?
4 and 1.
Wow. 4 and 1.
Isn't that crazy? 4 and 1.
4 and 1.
We got teammates with kids that young. Jason Wallace just had, like, a 2-year-old.
What?
Jay Wallace got, like, a 2-year-old. You kidding me?
Yo, I'm going to hit you off with something that's going to flip your wig. I get a surprise call from Tyrone Lewis last week. Tyrone has married and has a 4-week-old.
Come on, man. Get out of here.
Ty Lue, the Tank?
Tank.
Oh, hell no. We got to get him on the show.
Over the moon, happy as hell for him, but was absolutely blown. I was like, wait, what?
Isn't he 1 year behind us, Carl?
Yes. I was his host on his recruiting trip. And the young lady that he ended up marrying, I introduced them on the recruiting trip.
Wow.
Dang.
She got a 18 and a 21-year-old. And, I honestly don't think it was something that was planned because she straight up said, look, my mama calling us Abraham and Sarah. Because she's my year. So she my age. And Ty 1 year behind. So both of them in their 50s with a 4-week-old.
That's crazy. Nice.
I was like, wow, dog. I was like, cool. I said, bro, I'm happy as hell for him. But that joker going to be 70 years old with a high school graduate.
Whose grandfather you at this graduation? Oh, that's my kid up there.
Yeah, I'm happy for my dog, but damn, that one blew me right there, bro.
Damn, Gina.
I stay in shape, man, so I can play with the grandkids, you know? Grandkids, I say.
Yeah, yeah.
Dog, so you want to talk about you playing basketball again, don't you?
Well, you know, this COVID is here's the question, Hawk. Here's the question I got to ask you. I was on a call Zoom Monday, and I was talking to this cat that I played hoops with in the past. I said, hey, man, we ain't played hoops since March. You think our game has changed? Some people are going to lose a step.
Yeah. Right?
And some people might get better. Who the hell knows?
Some people might get better. I was talking to Wes the other day. I tried to shoot a basketball. My damn triceps started hurting.
I think I'm retired from hoops, man. Because them Achilles and knees.
Yes, sir.
I'm scared to go back, man.
You're not lying about that.
Bro, let me tell you something. You're trying to rehab an Achilles and a knee in your 50s, bro?
Exactly.
I want no parts of that. That's all right.
I got a stress fracture, man, from running. And was out for 6 weeks.
Really?
A stress in my foot. I got a stress fracture, was out for 6 weeks.
Dang.
I walk. Hey, Sean, I walk now.
Yeah, he walked.
I don't even run anymore. I just walk.
That's the key. And get some good shoes to walk in, too.
That's it, bruh. I walk in.
Oh, this my, call my go-to when it comes to running and rehabilitation out of a run. Trust me.
I'll be like, Hawk, what you doing? He'll post something. I hit him. I'll be like, all right, it hurt where? Okay, look, okay, it's probably this. You need to do this, this, and this. That joke hit me. He was like, dog, you was right.
I'll be hyped the next day, like, I can run again.
Get the damn heights immediately.
Bro, look at here. Hey, I'll exercise, but I want to be able to hit that little white ball for 18 holes. I'm good.
Sean, can you play golf?
Yeah, I play. As a matter of fact, probably going to play tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm playing tomorrow, too.
Yeah, I'm playing tomorrow.
Yeah,
y'all need to meet up and compete.
Yeah.
We need to get you to pick up them clubs, Hawk, and go ahead and
No, I don't got an issue picking them up. I just don't know where the ball going to go.
Hawk ain't got no patience, man. Hawk ain't got no patience.
Hey, you ain't got to do me like that, Sean.
And Cub, he messed around and get 20,000 steps on the golf course chasing the damn ball. You know, I got the Apple Watch on his ass. Hey.
Yeah. Ooh, that boy. Hey, I don't know, man. I don't got that wolf. I got a Amazon watch.
Yeah.
All right, whatever. All right, look. This is what we need to do. You got folks that love you in the Ville. You need to get a connect with a golf pro.
No doubt.
And be like, look, let me just get some lessons and start working from there, bro. And then you got to put in work to just try.
I got a couple people in mind I know that can take. I got a homie, Brandon Lloyd. He golf. I can holler at him. He'll give me work. Brandon Lloyd.
I know that name.
You know him from social media and stuff. He do stuff with UVA football and basketball.
Okay. That's a good look.
Yeah. So Hawk. So therefore, I'm gonna stay in your ass about getting some lessons, cause so we can get out there and hit at it, and it's just the connections, bro, and being able. You're talking about a challenge. It's the most challenging sport I've ever played in my life.
Oh, it definitely is. It definitely is.
Huh?
What's your handicap?
A lot.
What does that mean? What does handicap mean?
Cubs like a 10 or 12.
The number that it takes for you to get to par. Yeah. So. 72. Oh. 72 is par. So my handicap right now is probably about an 18. So
one of the best golfers I ever been involved with, God rest his soul, love that brother to death, was, and I played with him several times, was Daryl Hammond. That brother was
sir. Shout out to D Ham, rest in peace to D Ham. Yes, sir.
Unbelievable, man. And he was he taught himself the game.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. When he was the general manager for the Nashville Arena team, he brought me in there, and all he would do is go golf. Yep. And I happened to watch him. I was like, yo, you can really play, huh? He just looked at me like, hey, youngster, there's a lot I could do, youngster.
And he played left-handed.
Yeah. What?
He played golf left-handed. He was right-handed, played basketball, everything right. He played golf left-handed.
That dude was one of the best athletes I've ever seen in my life.
Never. Amazing, bro. Never. Amazing. The ageless one.
Yeah,
for real. Outstanding. Well, fam, we end this our segment with a little ditty that we called "Shut the Hell Up, I Am Underdog." And basically, what that means is something that pisses you off and that you're really frustrated about, but you're gonna overcome it anyway. So,
can it be some news that's going on right now?
Huh?
It could be anything, right?
It can be anything.
Yeah. Dog, I just got off the phone with my man Dave Brown. Dave Brown, I talk to on the regular. You know, Dave Brown, Phoebus Finest from Virginia, right?
Yeah.
Dave, every day.
Yes, sir. 7-5.
Dave told me. Dave said, "Man, did you hear what happened?" I said, "What?" He said, "Man, the Brooklyn Nets just named Steve Nash the head coach." I said,
"What?"
I said, and he had no coaching background, no leadership, I mean, no roles of leadership, just that he was a point guard. I said, wow. And they made Jock Vaughn the highest paid assistant coach in the with the Brooklyn Nets. Instead of promoting him to the head coach.
Instead of promoting him, because he was already
he was already on the team. They made Jock Vaughn the highest paid assistant. So I said, it's a slap like the Sam Cassells of the world, the Jason Kidds of the world.
Tyronn Lue
of the world. I mean, come on, dog. I mean, really? It just goes to show you, dog. 2020, it's still like 1969, 70, yo. It's crazy.
Wow.
In defense, like, here's the thing. Stephen Smith said it. Steve Nash is a great guy. Great guy. Yep. No offense to him. But just like, seriously?
Yeah.
Come on, get the hell out of here.
Oh.
And somebody's retorted that going to point out to a Jason Kidd or to an Isaiah Thomas, the Magic. But my thing, and I know where Stephen A. was coming from, it's the structure of the team. Like, he inherited a team that we know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Derek Fisher going to the Knicks.
Right.
Right.
Or when Jason Kidd got this job, he had old ass Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Joe Johnson, Darren Williams. Blocks with damn near the leading score. Like, that's what Stephen A. was talking about, the type of team that Kerr inherit and now Nash is inheriting.
Yeah, but I feel bad. My man Mark Jackson, who does the game from New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
And has coached
him. Could you imagine him in that role with that roster being from New York? Man, look, that Brooklyn arena.
They say KD endorsed it, and that's why, because him and KD got a great relationship. But I'm just like, yeah, I mean, them guys are going to endorse anybody that's a former player. Like, somebody, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't use that as a scapegoat.
That's trash.
Yeah.
Canned juice.
Oh, my God.
That's and if he's successful, you know he's going to lean on Jock the most. Like, yeah, if I'm the head, if I'm Steve, I'm leaning on Jock Vaughn the most. Like, hey, bro.
Jock is going to be running the plays up, running the defense. It's going to be Jock Vaughn the first 2 years.
Yes.
So why not just bring him in as an assistant coach under Jock Vaughn?
Exactly.
What that's going to remind me of? Tex Winter beside Phil Jackson. All the rings Phil got, people forget Tex was right. Tex was the one that architect all that stuff. Phil just managed the personalities.
Right.
Which it was a huge task, too. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, dog. That one just made me shake my head today.
Wow. Bro, man, I hadn't even heard it, bro. I'm blown right now. I am absolutely blown.
Yeah.
Oh, you heard Leonard Fournette sign with the Bucks too, right?
Yeah, I heard that. I'm like, oh, they just gave him away. Marone was like, yeah, he won't really even be worth a bag of chips. I was like, damn.
That's a damn thing. I know, right?
Try to sabotage that man.
Yeah, bro. See, I'm like, well, look at it. Institutional, dog. Institutional. We just
everybody trying to get out of trash and bill.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I think Ryan Clark was like, what in the Bill O'Brien is Jacksonville doing? I was like, boy, that damn Ryan Clark a fool.
Hey, Sean, before we let you out of here, bro, we wouldn't be doing the service. We ain't asked you which have you had a chance to see anything about Brendan Armstrong, what you think he would do as a starter now?
You know, here's the thing. He's a redshirt sophomore, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's got a chance to do what I did. I think, I don't know if I'm the last one to do it, to be a 3-year starter at the position. And when was the last time Virginia had a 3-year starter quarterback?
True.
3-year full-time starter? Yeah. 3-year
full-time starter.
When was it? It's been a long time.
I can't think of anybody.
Kurt had what, 2 years? Did Kurt Benko had 2 years?
Yeah. 2 years. Yeah, he was only two. Perkins was two.
Two. I think Vernon all them could have had three.
Biscuit wasn't two because he split time with Shad, right?
Yep.
He split time with Shad.
He started and then he went back to receiver and then he started again when Shad left.
Maybe Shad was the last one. Shad may have been a 3-year.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great trivia question right there.
I mean, I had 88, 89, 90. Those are the 3 years I started. And I actually played in 87, but Armstrong's got a chance, man. If he's as good as advertised, I don't know a lot about him, but I'm excited. They talk about his athleticism, so I can't wait to see that.
He can spin it, Sean.
Yeah, he can spin it, bro. He got a nice deep ball to him, bro.
Yeah, he can spin it, bro. He got quick release. He gets it out.
It just look funny though, because I know you're a quarterback purist. So when you see the release, I know you like.
Come on, left-handed. You know. Right.
One quick one. So tell me your impressions of Bryce Perkins, bro.
I've been texting with him, and I guess he's got a chance to make it because they released someone recently.
Yeah, the coaches like him. The coaches like him.
Taysom Hill type.
You know, one of the best things that may be for him is the fact that they don't have preseason games because it's all based on practice now and scrimmages, and squad scrimmages. So, I mean, it's going to be a quick look, but I think even if they don't keep him on the active roster, he'll be on the practice squad, so he'll get to learn.
Right.
Yeah, I'm pulling for him, man. I still reach out to him. I just hit him up this past week.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And how do you think he – when you look back on his Virginia career, how big of an impact did he have?
Now you podding, cuz.
He saved the staff. Seriously. No, I give him credit for finding him because everyone was like, you know, what are y'all doing recruiting Arizona? Like, really, right? Yeah. Why? But he was special.
Yeah.
And now, literally, they got a lot to replace because he was probably 70% of the offense.
True.
But he saved the staff. We talk about wins and losses.
Did he save the OC?
Probably. I only say that because, you know, I'm trying to stay neutral in case, you know, I get a call.
Oh, you hell no. You politicking on our podcast?
I'm politicking, yeah, I'm politicking, man. You never know. So
you know we don't allow that.
Yeah,
my bad. Don't allow that, dog. You think they take that? Look, they don't listen to us. You know what I'm saying? They'll take us serious. They know we, you know, this comedy style.
Y'all rebels, so you're right.
Hey, look, coming from the GOAT himself, who would be your top five quarterbacks of all time if you wouldn't include yourself?
At Virginia?
Yes.
Oh, BP would definitely be in there. Biscuit would be in there.
Uh-huh.
Schaub would be in there.
Uh-huh.
Mikowski would be in there.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Oh, this last one. Don't make me black your eye if you don't say his name.
I'm gonna say it because I thought he was good for the coaching staff that they had him. But I gotta put Sewell in there.
You're gonna put Sewell in there before Aaron Brooks.
Let me rethink that. AB only had really one good year. Right?
Yeah, two.
Did you play with him?
Yeah, that's my quarterback, man. It's my quarterback.
So give me the 2 years that he had that he stood out.
Not well, the last half of 97. And then that trickled over to 98.
When was the comeback against Tech? 98?
Yeah.
When y'all went there and then you scored a touchdown? That was 98? Yeah.
That was 90, his last year.
So what was his numbers good in 97?
Yeah. I mean, especially against Tech. Both years threw for over 300 versus them.
Y'all beat them both times?
Yeah. He was 2-0 against them.
That's impressive. I don't know, man. I don't know. That's a great question. Like, I guess he would be, if you say five, he would be 5B.
And then they're going to ask you about Matt Shaw. You ain't say Matt Shaw.
Yeah, he did.
I said Shaw.
Oh, you did? Okay, my fault. Yeah. Players mess up.
Shaw is just his whole body of work, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, I actually mentored Shaw. So when Shaw was struggling, I went up there with his parents and spent some time with him.
Yeah.
So.
Good business. That's good business. Well, you named two of the four.
Yeah.
On Mount Rushmore, streaking along, had a Mount Rushmore, and they had you, George Welsh, Bill Dudley, and Marcus Hagan.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mount Rushmore. That was their Mount Rushmore football.
Wow.
So yeah. Well, fam, we sure appreciate having you, bro. Thanks for spending time with us, man. You know we got to get you back. Once we have this season or whatever, however many games, bro, after we done got a chance to watch a couple of them, get you back on, get your assessments, you know, and how you see it as the GOAT. And we just appreciate you, fam.
No doubt, man. Appreciate it. Hey, stay black.
No doubt. No doubt. No doubt.
Well, that's my guy right there, Ward.
No question. No question. I love you to life, GOAT. I love you to life, boy.
Love you, dog. All right, bro.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been The Lockdown with T-Cub, Ball Hawk.
Hey, before we go, I had a fan try to come at my Ball Hawk call like it was a hawk call. I am not a hawk. I am a Ball Hawk. So that is a Ball Hawk call, not the hawk screech. You know what I'm saying? So,
Get to him, Hawk.
But I know one thing. Sean better get. Hey, look. Sean, I'm going to black your eye if you don't put Aaron Brooks in your top five. I make him reach your eye, but I'm going to try.
Well, look, this is the end of this episode of The Lockdown. We appreciate y'all. See you next week. We appreciate Sean Moore, the GOAT, the man, the myth, the legend, LaVie, a.k.a. Light Skin, a.k.a. Denty Moore. And we go. Peace.
Peace.